In momentum space, the Schrodinger equation in the center of mass frame, the total momentum is zero. So if one electron has k, the other has minus k. So the energy is 2k squared. So in momentum space, where this is the wave function of the pair you have, then the v, it kicks the pair into different momentum states. And this is a Hamiltonian. And so we're looking for an eigenfunction. And E refers to, that is, the lowest energy state of the kinetic energy is when k is equal to kf, that's 2ef, that's kf squared over m. And E is how much more or less the energy of that two electron state is as compared to the obviously lowest free electron state when the momentum is just at the edge kf. And the question is, when you turn on the potential, is there an eigenstate with an eigenenergy less than 2EF? In other words, in this notation, whether E is less than zero or whether E is greater than zero. If E is less than zero, then there's a bound state, and these two electrons then are bound to each other in virtue of the model. Now, the Cooper model is that the Vk is minus V, and I'm going to put L cubed there. It's a volume. I need a normalization factor, which is 1 over the square root of the volume per plane wave. You know, when you do Born approximation for scattering, that you have e to the ik dot r over the square root of the volume to get the scattering cross section. And you see here, I need a volume cubed, and here there's an integral over k prime. And this integral over k prime will carry l cubed over 2 pi cubed. So the l cubed in the sum is going to cancel the l cubed there. So. So the back. Okay. So that's a triviality. So I stuck a minus sign here. Further convention Okay. Here's the family tree. That's my cell. And this thickness. Is omega d. Omega d means omega the by, and the v is non-zero. I begin with a k here, and then the v scatters the k to k prime, to k double prime, and the pair just wanders around the family sphere. And the thickness omega the by. And the thickness omega divide is there because the characteristic energies, which I sketched for you in the qualitative discussion, which give rise to the attraction, the domain of frequencies which are transmitted due to the non-local lattice intervention of the electron-electron interactions. Those inelastic collisions with the lattice generally change in energy on the scale of the lapse of time for which that interaction lasts. And I've explained to you that lapse of time is the time for the lattice to give one shake, which is an inverse Debye frequency. So the characteristic passage of energy in the scattering is the Debye frequency. Now, whether it's one Debye frequency or two Debye frequencies, at this point, we don't fight about that. But the thing has been made quantitative afterwards. So this is very well motivated, this estimate. And for simplicity, V is constant in the shell. And that's a stupid, simple working hypothesis, and one can easily generalize that by giving one forms of V, and one can solve model problems. And one always confirms that you don't go wrong with this model. You don't go wrong with this model, provided my physical argument for the attraction is okay. If my physical argument for the attraction goes haywire, and then this model, it doesn't cover that case. But otherwise, it seems to have quantitative validity. Well, with this model, then, one has a trivial problem to solve, a quantum mechanical. Maybe I should pull that down first. Voila. You have to rise to New Zealand heights to pull that one down.
Because of my boots.
Because of your boots. So the problem to be solved. The eigenvalue equation. No, I'm worried. I'm a bit worried about the signs there. Hardest part. That's okay. I'm sorry, I'm worried. What I have is here. That's T. That's minus T. Ah, it's okay. That's minus the kinetic energy. I put the V on the right hand side, and that's plus V. But plus V is minus the potential energy. So this equation reads, and minus the potential energy, minus the kinetic energy, minus the potential energy is equal to minus the energy. And so it's a Schrodinger equation multiplied by minus with the sign conventions. Now, for V greater than zero, one has an isolated pole. Well, I should show you what I mean by a pole. So my Schrodinger equation is converted to so this is the integral over the shell. So now I cannot remember that this integral is over the shell. So the k squared, this has 2 epsilon f plus a little bit, because it's over the shell. I have the shell, its radius is 2 epsilon f, and I add a little k squared to it. So a k squared is epsilon f plus a little bit. Okay? Am I getting this thing right? I want to argue that if V is greater than zero, then this thing is negative, this thing is positive. So in order to get a solution, E has to be negative, E has to be less than zero. A solution exists if E is less than zero, if V is positive. I went through this with care last night, and it's even right. A solution exists if V is greater than zero, with E less than zero. And then there's a positive, there is a bound state. And it's an if and only business. No solution exists. no solution, no bound state exists. So that's the one that interests us. And I want to show that no matter how small V is, provided its sign is positive, no matter how small the attraction is, that you always get a solution. And that's opposite to the tradition. That's Cooper's. So where did I pick up my notes? No, they're not in that. They must be in this pile. Sorry. Right, it ought to be right here. So, calling C, N of C is density of states. At k equal ks. So I convert this sum into an integral on a k values of the shell. And what really interests me is for narrow shells. Then one is equal to V, the integral over the shell. 0 to omega d. This part. So that's Cooper. And there's an N. There you have it. So for narrow shells, the solution for narrow shells, you have this marble at E is equal to the Debye frequency, which you might have thought in the first place, because that's the energy of the inelastic collision, which I explained to you, comes up in the mechanism for the attraction, and there's a minus sign. An attractive energy, E to the minus 1 over N. And N of 0, when C is equal to 0, K is equal to KF, V. That's Cooper's result. So that's a highly non-perturbative result. No matter how small v, there's always a bound state. And more non-perturbative you couldn't get, then more non-analytic, it goes like e to the minus 1 over v as v goes to 0, but it exists. So it's a very small binding energy. And it exists for infinitesimal v. So a Cooper pair will always be bound in virtue of the fact, remember what I told you, that the reason, the physical reason why you have this instability and why it always binds is because you always have momentum present. You don't have to give up momentum to localize the thing as you did in the picture which I drew with the box where you had to give up h bar squared over a squared. Now you don't. The momentum is already there. How is this manifest in the formula? N is proportional to the kf squared. It's the density of states of kf. It's the fact that you have a finite number, a finite density of states at the Fermi sphere that gives you this. That is a mathematical translation of the existence of the pre-existence of a momentum scale to help you bind. And that's the role of this. And because you have that scale, N, you see, N gives you a momentum scale, it's possible to form a non-dimensional parameter, NV. So you form it, and the exponential comes in. And then if it clinches the matter, you can find out what, you know, this is the thing that's going around. You can find out what the radius of this guy is as it goes around the sphere. And so to clinch this thing. Psi k, we pick up from here. You couldn't understand what I had written. What I did was I took the psi of k, I divided by this factor, and I crossed out the sum on psi of k. To give the eigenvalue equation here. Excuse me, I left out that factor. But you have to help me out sometime. Now, psi k is a constant over e minus 2 c. Yeah. That's the that's the E, and that's the CK. So you put that in, and you get yeah, that's right. If I introduce a Fermi velocity, K over M, and that's the velocity of movement around the sphere, K over M, yeah. So this is the statement that the width of the state is the width in space. The size of the state varies like 1 over the energy, but modulated by the Fermi velocity. And that is the Cooper analysis. This, I recorded the size of the Cooper bound state because this gives you a measure of non-local effects which you may anticipate. And namely, if you have the whole mechanism occurring because of this bound state, and if one electron moves here, then the electron, another electron at this distance away is going to be affected, then you may expect that if I make a perturbation here, that it will affect the electron system there in a distance scale, which is the distance of this bound state. And that is called the correlation length. So this is the square of a correlation length. It simply is that the bound states are made up of pairs, and so if I touch one there, then it's felt over the characteristic radius of the bound state. Okay. So that's the elementary motivation for how electrons get bound in a superconductor due to the interaction with the lattice through the Cooper binding condition. And now we want to build the many-body theory out of these physical ideas, because that is going to give us, and that's going to make contact with the general concept of spontaneous broken symmetry, which we've encountered in the course. This is the dynamical basis of it. And now we're going to go into the more conceptual basis of the spontaneous broken symmetry that's implied. Now, the aim is to build a many-body state which no longer treats these core electrons as passive, but handles all the electrons together, and they all make one a great big bound state. So no longer a two-body problem in n bodies, but an n-body problem, period. Now, when you do nuclear physics, the way the nuclear physicists used to do it in the 40s and 50s was they wrote a totally anti-symmetrized product of pair wave functions that was called the Slater determinant. And that's a very hard thing to do. And when you have n to the 23 nucleons, it's even harder. So obviously, that's not the way to go about it. So you have to be clever. And Bardeen is a very clever man. I think that's a theorem. And what he did was he said, okay, I'm going to do something which perhaps it will offend you, but it has a virtue of simplicity, and then we'll later see if really it is offensive. So I'm going to build a many-body state in which k by k, I'm going to say that there's an amplitude for the pair to occupy that state and an amplitude for the pair to not occupy that state. And I'm going to take a product of all of those amplitudes, and I'm going to sum up the whole thing and make a guess for the form of the many-body state. So here's the Bardeen estimate. The VCS state, using second quantization. There's a pair, a creation and annihilation operator called BK. What you do is that at the kth level of the shell, at the kth level inside the Fermi sphere, the amplitude that there be a pair there is Vk, and the amplitude that that shell, that that kth state within the Fermi sphere be empty is Uk. Okay? Because this is really vacuum. Right? This is, honest to God, nothing is there. So we want to build up a function in which that's occupied by a pair, that's occupied by a pair, that's occupied by a pair, up to a certain point of the order of the Fermi momentum, and then so suddenly it starts to fuzz out. And then that's occupied by no pair, that's occupied by no pair. And between them, there's a transition of partial occupation and partial base occupation. Okay? That's Bardeen's guess as a variation away function. And then these things are big commutation relations, usual Fermi commutation relations. You can easily check, for example, that these obey Bose, being a pair of Fermi operators, they obey. Let me get the sign right. They obey Bose-Einstein constants. They obey Bose commutation relations, which are obtained by this is zero. If I forget to put in spins on the Fermi operators, you just put them in yourself. Okay. Then, using this, you may check that BCS is a normalized wave function in Fock space if so this is in virtue of the commutation relations. You just do it. Okay? Where I've used that vacuum is such that BK operating on vacuum is zero. By vacuum, I mean vacuum, no particles, not BCS. Sometimes they may make a mistake and use the word vacuum for ground state. But I'll always try to reserve the word vacuum for nothing present and BCS for the ground state. Okay, so this is the BCS guess of a wave function which incorporates the Cooper idea. That VK is the probability that the case level be occupied by a pair. And so you anticipate that the Fermi sphere will be filled in the conventional way and then give out. And similarly, UK, so I'll write VK, and similarly, UK square. So the excitations here are characterized by holes, an absence of pairs. And the excitations here are characterized by particles, the presence of pairs. And what's a particle on a hole becomes confused in the transition region. And this spreading out in the transition region is that spreading out due to the fact that wave function over an interval omega dabi in the Cooper function has been spread out into a shell. So this characteristic width is a priori given by the width omega d of the shell for which the interaction is non-zero. But in reality, when you do it, you know that the effect of omega d and v is such that the influence is cut down from omega d by the exponential e to the minus nv. So this is really a very small quantity, which is omega d times e to the minus 1 over nv. And that turns out to be the order of the critical temperature. So typically, whereas the Fermi level, the Fermi energy, is a few volts, the Debye temperature is about 100 degrees, of, say, a tenth of a volt. And the critical temperature is 1/100th of that. The critical temperature is 1 degree. So this is 1 degree out of something between 10 and 50,000 degrees. So it's really very, very small. There's a very minute a mutilation of the Fermi sphere over this very thin skin, which is responsible for these very low energy properties, and which explains why Camaleonis had to go down to temperatures of a few degrees in order to get this effect in this theory. Now, this is a very interesting proposition, this Bardeen-Cooper-Schrieffer wave function. And it contains something quite revolutionary. It contains much more, it looks okay, yeah? But it's much more revolutionary than you think. Because if you calculate the expectation value of VK, then you find it's not zero. And you find it's UK VK. So VK is equal to the average of VK is a zero here. The average of VK is zero here. And the classification of states here is on the both extremes is conventional. Either a state is occupied with probability 1 or unoccupied with probability 1 here, and similarly here. But between them, it doesn't know what to dance on. It's both occupied and it's disoccupied. So the word disoccupied in French means, désoccupé means unemployed. So you have you have this very interesting situation. And you see that it violates conservation of N. BCS and BCS is not an eigenfunction of that operator. Because if it were an eigenfunction of that operator, the average value of BK would be zero. Because the average value of BK is the average value of AK, I'll forget spins for the moment, if you'll forgive me. AK, A minus K. Therefore, for this to be non-zero, and you make the calculation and you check it, for this to be non-zero, this means that in the linear combination of which we have written, which is psi BCS, when we write it out in detail as a linear combination, it will be a linear combination of states with n equals 0, n equals 1, n equals 2, et cetera. When I was talking in terms of pairs, it will contain n equals 0 pairs, n equals 2 pairs, and n equals 1 pair, up to an Avogadro's number of pairs. So it will be a linear combination of populations of all pairs. And in order for this to be non-zero, and this being non-zero means that when you calculate the expectation value of psi BCS in the usual Fuck notation by populations, you are including matrix elements in psi BCS which change total population. So psi BCS is not an eigenfunction of the total population. You're giving up conservation of a number of particles. So there are two choices. Either you're a coward, and then you take your notes and you throw them out and you put them under the basket, or you're a genius. And Bardeen understood that he had a great thing. And this is a great thing, that he's giving up a conservation law and writing down his wave function, and then he's going to reinterpret it. Now, we'll go a little into the interpretation and the justification of its use next time. But the point is that just like in statistical mechanics, if I have a system of a fixed number of particles n, I can do thermodynamics, valid thermodynamics, on many, many quantities, almost all quantities of interest, by giving up the fixed value of n and going into the grand canonical ensemble. Now, all of you are familiar with the grand canonical ensemble. OK, so in the next time, I'll review a little bit the concept of the grand ensemble for just a few minutes. So you have to, that's how you feel it in your heart. And, but in the grand ensemble, you have an ensemble which contains all populations. The, why is it useful, therefore? Well, you can think of a grand ensemble as a big system, like the particles in this room. And then you can take a cup and scoop out a cup of air and ask, what are the properties of the molecules in that cup? And when I look at the molecules in that cup, its n is not fixed because I'm taking a sample from all over, and sometimes I can have the average value of n, and sometimes the fluctuations about the value of m, when the average value of m is the average density times the volume of the cup, but the density fluctuates. So the number of molecules in the cup fluctuates. So the correct ensemble to describe, and you prove, the correct ensemble to describe the physics of the molecules in the cup is the grand ensemble and not the original petite ensemble. You make use of the petite ensemble mathematically to get a line on the fluctuations of the density in the cup. Having made that use, you then prove that your statistical mechanics, by giving up the conservation of n, and by studying the physics of the molecules in the cup, and does no injustice to the problem. And you calculate the same specific heat of the molecules in the cup, whether you can find the molecules to be within the cup, or to be within 10 cups, or to be within all the cups in the room. You always get the same specific heat. You always get the same equation of state, and so on. OK? Because you prove that the fluctuations are of order 1 over root n, and root n is of order 10 to the 10, and so to within human accuracy, you haven't made a mistake. Well, that was the philosophy of Mr. Bardeen, and he proved, and next time I'll show you, that the relevant matrix elements for physical processes are correctly handled by the BCS wave function, which explicitly has been constructed so as not to conserve the number of particles. Having done that, then we're in the context of this course, because where's my BCS wave function? The UKs and the VKs can be complex. And the normalization condition is only that the absolute value of UK squared plus VK squared, plus absolute VK squared is 1. So UK can go like e to the I theta and VK e to the I theta. And BK then would have an average value proportional to e to the 2 I theta. And it would not be real. And when we make calculations, we say, well, we'll choose a gauge in which BK is 0. And I'll show you next time that that's the analogy in the spin problem of when you break the total value of the spin, that the spin points in a certain direction, and that choosing the phase of BK is the analog of choosing the direction of a spin in an abstract space. And that abstract space is called the gauge space, and it's isomorphic to the xy plane of the spin problem. And the BKs are isomorphic to the x and y components of spin in the system of quantization where you diagonalize SD. So once I'm in the BCS setup, then I have bridged the interesting experimental phenomenological elements of the subject of BCS, and I've slipped into the conceptual content of the subject, making contact with spontaneous broken symmetry through the phase of the BKs. And then from the BKs, we shall construct the, I shall indicate, I hope I can get it all done in 1 hour next time, 1 or 2 hours. We shall construct the Landau-Ginzburg field, and that will look like a relativistic field and all the standard law that goes into the field theory of spontaneous broken symmetry, which I told you was valid for spin systems, now will be valid for the superconductor as well. And so that's how we're going to slip into the situation. So this time was just the solid state physics, and next time once more, we slip into the conceptual field theoretic foundations of the subject. But it's a nice subject, huh? It's infinitely cute. I mean, it's one of the nice things that happened in the 20th century. Unfortunately, it didn't have much to do with it.